This is Bill McKinney interviewing Tom Kelly on July 8, 2020 in Mineral Point, Wisconsin. So Tom, why don't you tell us about how you came to Mineral Point and what it was like living here in the earlier times.
Okay, well, I'd been living in Horicon, Wisconsin, where I was actually working in a John Deere factory for 3 years. My parents lived in Horicon. My dad was a teacher. And my mom got me the job because she was the receptionist at the plant, and she had some give and take on that one. But I worked there for 3 years, and I was getting sort of bored, and I was dating a woman that was, I met at UWM where I got my art degree, and the woman I met was at UWM, and then she was in Platteville, and we were talking one night, and I was grumbling about, oh, working in a factory and doing that sort of stuff, and she said, well, why don't you move down to Mineral Point? And that was Marianne Meyer, who was another artist who lived at the foundry. And so, you know, being footloose and fancy, I guess I said, yeah, that sounds great. So I moved to Mineral Point in 1975. I think it was late summer, perhaps. And I moved into the foundry. A lot of people still know it as the foundry, although it was a bookstore. But first of all, it was a wayward home for poor artists, it was owned by an art professor in Platteville. And I'm forgetting his name, but that can be filled in. And so right across from Popolo's is this big porch thing, and there was a glass studio in there, and I had a big studio in the front where Gail used to have her office. And so what we did was we all had a studio, and we shared the bathroom, I mean, a really small bathroom, and the kitchen. So it was sort of like a commune almost, but we never called it that. And
so how many artists shared that space at the time?
Let's see, I think at that point when I moved in, I lived in the front where all those little clear story windows are. I lived there. I think Gary Sisler lived there. Marianne Meyer lived there. Julia Suits, who has gone on to be a cartoonist for the New York magazine. And I think there are a few other people, and their names are sort of lost in memory right now. I think if I think hard enough, I may be able to come back up with them, but not currently. But life was quite interesting. It was fun. Dave Krebs lived there for one point. Bruce came in after I moved out and had his studio there. So
that's Bruce Hoddle?
Bruce Hoddle, yes. Roland was around because he came just right in 70, just a little before I did in 1975.
And that would be Roland Sardison?
That's correct, Roland Sardison.
So you lived upstairs?
I did, and had a studio on the ground floor, street level, and then we shared the kitchen and the bathroom and the gallery space, and you know, and it seemed to work out somehow. I mean, we had little tiffs once in a while, but we ended up doing a lot of fun stuff. On the side of the Brewery Creek, we used to hang, I think we had sewn two sheets together and hung up down that stone wall, and we'd sit on the porch and watch movies. Somebody had a projector. Another crazy thing we once did was somebody's friend was a lobster fisherman in Maine. So we got this crazy idea and said, why don't we have a lobster feed at the Foundry in Mineral Point? And basically it was just at first for the artists there. Well, it was so successful, and we had all invited maybe a friend. That word got out, and people were hounding us to do it again. But that used to be all parking lot, a lot of it. It wasn't forested like it was a little later. And we'd set up these long tables with paper, and I drew red lobsters all over the paper. And we had a big pot, and we'd boil them. But I think after three of them, it was no longer any fun, because all we were doing was working and acting as waiters and not having any of the fun. So I think it lasted for three glorious years, but that was one of the kooky things we used to do there. So
I've heard there's rumors of ghost stories in the Foundry. Did you ever experience anything unusual there?
I did once. And it was during a iced out blizzard sort of thing, where no electricity. We were all over at the Walker House, which is where artists went. That was sort of their bar. But eventually, after the candles burned low, we all had to go home. You had to be careful because there were live wires on the ground. And there was ice all over the place. But that night, I went upstairs, and then I had a bridgeway to another small set of stairs, and it was like a warren, really, but it was wonderful. And I slept on a second level where I could go out onto the roof, and I was up there sleeping, and all of a sudden I got awakened. I felt like I'd stuck my finger in a socket. It was just this electric sort of thing. And at first I thought, oh my God, what was that? And then I had this feeling that there were very, very wild spirits in my room. And I had come to find out that horses, it had been a livery at one point, and horses had died in the fire there. And, you know, it sort of felt like that, but to turn off my light, I had to lean out of bed and reach down. But I was so freaked out, I couldn't get out of bed. The bed was my sanctuary. And it seems like I fought with this spirit, and it felt somewhat crazy. And it seemed like I was fighting all this until I was really tired, and I finally looked up, and there were clear story windows, and the light, it was becoming dawn. And as soon as I saw it was dawn, everything just went away. Just poof, you know. Now, I don't label that because I don't really know what it was, but bad food the night before, maybe, I don't know. But that was the one experience I'd had there.
Did anyone else live in the Foundry with you?
Oh, yeah. We all had these little rooms, you'd walk up the stairs and cross this little bridge, and there'd be a tiny room over there, and then you get on this bridge and walk over here. And to get into my room, there was a big I-beam there, and I hit my head over it once or twice. So I put a big pillow on it. So it wasn't up to code, let me tell you. And Colleen Ott lived there. And often, you know, she had the main central space for her glass furnace. And every once in a while, you would walk down there like you were walking to the kitchen and our living room, and she'd be blowing glass topless. So. Which I thought was always quite interesting, but you know, that was Colleen, so.
Oh, funny.
And there were a huge number of artists that went through the foundry. Bud Wall was the art professor owner of the building, and it really was an incubator for artists. He was way before his time when it comes to that. So, God, Julius Suits lived there, Gary Sisler. Roland was always around, although he didn't live there. Colleen, just a whole bunch of people, and it rotated all the time. Julius Suits lived there when I was there. And, so, you know, and life with that many artists all in one spot can get really interesting. I tell you, but going back a little bit, when I moved to town, to Mineral Point, this was not brand new to me because I've had relatives in Mineral Point since probably the 1850s. And, but everyone thought I was a newbie, and back then it was, oh, you're one of them, not one of us. And I was in the Midway one night, and I ran into a couple of guy farmers, or I don't know what they did. Maybe they worked at Cummings or something like that, but they got in this argument with me, and it wasn't physical, but this guy was saying, oh, you're one of them, you know. And they thought we're all odd and weird. So he had this argument, and he wasn't a very good debater, so he got to the end of his argument in a big hurry, and he didn't know what to say, so he put his hands on his hips and said, well, my family's been here since the 1880s, meaning his family was here longer, so he trumped me somehow. And I said, you really want to play that stupid game? And I said, my people were here in the 1850s or 60s. So I said, who just won that silly game? And he just looked at me, didn't have a word to say, turned around and walked away. Which I thought was absolutely hilarious. But I would know people on the streets and say hi, and they'd look at me like, how do you know me? Oh, well, you know my Aunt Doris or Uncle Jack Harker, you know, that sort of stuff. It was an odd introduction to Mineral Point.
So tell me again, what town did you grow up in?
Horicon, Wisconsin.
Horicon.
That was the first teaching job my father had after World War II. And he was a biologist and a ag teacher. So, and then my mom worked as the receptionist for, there's a big John Deere plant up there for 20 years, which she loved because she was a social butterfly like I am. So it worked.
So tell me again, all those artists who lived in the foundry, did they all support themselves with their art at the time, or were they situations?
Well, a lot of them were young and wet behind the ears and starting their careers. Chris Reese was also a glass blower. And he went on with his career to be quite famous. You would see him in, you know, Arts and Crafts of America magazines and stuff like that. But yeah, everyone plied their, either they had galleries someplace or, you know, sold their work there. After I left, Bruce moved in, and he was quite a presence, you know, and then it really sort of, after a while, and I'm not sure how long it was, really became Bruce's studio.
Oh, is that right?
Well, I think so, sort of. I'm not sure when it ended being sort of a communal artist thing. That part I'm still fuzzy about, so.
So at some point, Bruce then moved to or purchased a building down the street on Commerce, right?
Yes, that belonged to Roland Sardison. And all of those, I think there were three buildings there. I think Cutler's Bar was in one of them, and Roland was in one of, and I think Bruce took another one, and they eventually, Roland really did a lot of work to save that part of the street in Mineral Point. And Bruce did too. He was collecting hardware and doors and everything, and anytime anyone needed it for restoration, they come to Bruce, like, I need a lock, or I need a plate that's of this era. And, you know, he'd rummage around in his basement, his later studio.
Did Roland consider himself an artist at the time, or was he doing stonework? I heard that he was a potter at one point as well.
He was a potter. When I first moved here, Roland was the potter up at the potter's shed at Feli's. Feli's then owned it. This was the guy that made a lot of money doing sending flowers by wire. And he had, well, I think everyone knows about that place. He had it turned into a garden with walks, and there were some other artists there, I think, from time to time. Bob Camardo had a shop down there. Roland had a potting shop up in the potter's shed, which I think it still is. So that's where he sort of hung out. But he'd hang out in the foundry too, because we're all of like mind, so to speak. And, you know, we all sort of acclimated. I ended up marrying a woman from Mineral Point, Kathy Landon. A lot of people know her from her father, I guess, who ran a car dealership. So I'm sure there's a variety of fondness connected with him, but...
Was this car dealership in Mineral Point?
Yes, it was. It was up where the renovation kitchen is now.
Oh, up on Dodge Street?
Yeah. That was his showroom, but earlier he lived in the building. It was the corner of Fountain and... Oh, God, it's the last street before it hits Commerce. And there were always big Pontiac signs and stuff out there. That was a workshop, and he owned it. Ulrich Seeloff now owns it.
Oh, right.
And I think the hospital's maybe taken over the front part of it as a, you know, a gym or rehab or something. So.
Interesting.
Yeah, and the apartment, Kathy and I used to go up there, and there were all auto parts But the old stage was still up there with the lattice work, and it was called, I think, something Beer Garden. But you had to go up this rickety steps on the outside. That would never pass code these days. And it was a dance hall, and I think it was a roller rink at one time, and, you know, just a lot of different things, so, as many buildings in Mineral Point were.
Did her family live there, or was it strictly for the dealership?
That was for the dealership. It was mainly the auto workshops. I think his display room was probably there for a while, but then he built a new one up on Dodge. Kathy's parents lived on North Iowa Street in that big red Victorian and cream house. Right across from, a lot of people know it as Mrs. Potterton's house, now the Beeman house. So I got to know a lot of people through them, a lot of local people that I wouldn't have known before. So I sort of walked between two worlds, and it was sort of interesting. So,
at what point in time did you end up purchasing your house on Liberty?
I moved into my house on Liberty. I think I only spent about a year or a year and a half at the Foundry. I continued to have my studio there for a little while. And then I moved on to Liberty, where it was stone first floor and log second floor. And I spent a lot of time trying to rehab it. It ended up burning down, unfortunately. I put it back up with a guy who builds log cabins as a living, a friend of mine. And we found an old cabin in Boaz, north of Richland Center. And I bought it, and we'd go up every weekend, and we took the house apart nail by nail. So we salvaged all the wood and all of that. And in the kitchen, which was 18 by 18 foot, is probably the whole house at one point. The floor needed to be dug up because it needed to be a crawl space and stuff. Well, we start taking the oak flooring, which was like, you know, almost 2 inches thick, off the floor. They were resting right on log joists, which were resting right on the ground. And it's an Irwin's addition, which is like, I think, the oldest addition in Mineral Point, just south of Fountain Street, basically, in Soffol.
Did the fire destroy the entire log cabin portion of that building, or?
It did, because, well, the stone, I guess it was an electrical, which was puzzling because I had put in all new electrical. I guess they thought maybe a rodent had gotten in or something and chewed some wires. And nobody saw it because the rock was going to stand like the rock and everything could burn out. And you could. And same thing with the logs. They were beautiful, squared off logs, deep. And so it burned inside a long time before it went through the roof. And that's why nothing was really sort of saved out of it. But I remember getting the call. I hope I'm not telling tales out of school, but I was with Kathy then, and we were living in her house. And I got a phone call at midnight saying, "Tom, your house is on fire." I won't forget that day in a long time. So,
who called you?
A neighbor, I think. But nobody had seen it for a long time because it was contained by all this really heavy material.
Wow.
Yeah. I had a lot of beautiful 19th century painted furniture. I had a beautiful 18th century gate leg table, some great Windsor chairs, but boom. It's funny how ethereal things can be sometimes.
So true.
Yeah. But I continued collecting, so.
So part of your career, if I'm not mistaken, was restoring furniture like that. Is that?
I worked for Bob Camardo first, and then, which was, if you turn at Fountain and are going down the hill, there's the Polkinghorne building on the left, which is all rehab now. And I believe Ulrich Seeloff did that. And then there is a big gravel open space, and then this brick industrial building, you know, iron framed windows. That was Bob Camardo's restoration. But the Polkinghorne building was really cool because nobody was living in that when I was at the foundry and working at Camardo's. So we would go spelunking underneath there because there were two or three stories underneath. And we came to a doorway once that was drifted shut with sand. I mean, it looked like you were in Europe or in Egypt. And you know, we crawled all over that building. For a while it was, I think, the farmer's store, which was a supply store for all sorts of stuff. And they had a robbery once, which is, I don't care for the robbery, but the guy wasn't real smart either because he got in to the story above and then found a way down, and he saw this thing that dropped down. Well, it was a lath and plaster ceiling, and he didn't land on the joists. So he went right through the ceiling, and when the cops investigated the next day, there was this whole sort of body print, face down, arms akimbo, or arms out, and then these dragging movements away from it. So, and I thought, oh boy, only in Mineral Point. It was one of those again. I think they probably did catch him too. They probably checked the hospital first. So, yeah.
Funny.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. Got a good laugh about that. But and then a lot of other artists moved in, you know, all over the place. I would say Max and Ava were some of the first to really be artists, and Edgar, probably, he was an artist. Bob, well, of course they did Pendarvis, everyone knows that.
What kind of art did Edgar do?
Toward the end of his life, he did a lot of collage work.
Really?
Yeah, I guess it must have been easier because I do collage work right now, so I think that's sort of the mindset sometimes. I don't know what he did early. He did all sorts of little bits and things. I think his main art project was really restoring Pendarvis. I mean, he had the help of a Cornish mason that lived in town. He was old when I saw pictures of him. But I even remember going to the restaurant Bob had at Pendarvis.
Really?
Or at that site. It wasn't in Pendarvis. It was in a different building, a small one. And we sat down, and Bob came out in an apron, and there were all these pasties, and he had all of this china, you know, most of it antique. And he loved doing it. You know, he liked being on the stage a little bit. And that was a treat. I only went there once, and It was before I moved here, actually. So, but I got to experience it, and it was really nice. I think Heinz came through and wrote about it, like Heinz 57 variety, that Heinz, and became quite famous for a while, I think.
I think that's true.
Yeah. But to be in there, sitting in the Cornish cottage, an antique furniture with antique cutlery, and maybe the cutlery wasn't, but the china sure was. So that was really cool.
Did you interact with Max and Ava at any point?
Oh, God, yes. Yes, Kathy, she was married to Ted Landon, and at that time they were in the little brick house right next to Ivy's, which Lisa Hay owns now. And they lived in that as their house. The kitchen and the living room was downstairs. Ted had a sort of a studio on the first floor, and he did etchings and that sort of stuff besides paintings. Etchings were his bread and butter, and this is where I have to give Kathy credit, because once he did the plate, he was done with it. She inked them. She, wiped the plate, printed them all, matted them all, framed them all, and took them to art shows, too. So Ted was along for the ride in many senses, but and I got to know Kathy as a friend years before that we ever got involved. It was after she and Ted were divorced. But that was a cool little place. Yeah.
So when approximately did the Max and Ava live there?
They lived in the what is currently the Tim Freeman house, I think, or Mary and Tim. I think they lived there long before I did. I think they lived there in the 30s even. They had moved out from Milwaukee, and if you go to Milwaukee, I was at a antique place once, and it showed a lot of Max's drawings of Milwaukee, charcoal drawings, which was sort of a shock because you think of him as a Mineral Point artist. But and Ava was quite the gal, chain smoking redhead, just wilder than wild. I won't go into all the details, but and she did all these fabulous pots, these really crazy off-the-wall stuff. And Kathy used to take all her babysitting money and would go downtown during Maxwell Street days and buy all the Ava pottery she could, or figures or whatever. So we have quite a collection of it at home, although it was really beautiful. I think we're going to sell some of it soon, but
That's interesting to me that Max and Ava were kind of a bridge to like the community of artists that you were part of.
Right.
Kind of a continuation.
Well, I think Bruce and Roland and I were sort of the beginning of the new era. There had been Max and Ava. There had been another woman that lived up right across from the row house in Pendarvis that was an artist. There were other unnamed artists, or maybe they're named and I just don't know them. But and they were here because of Max and Ava, or Bobby and Edgar. So they all brought stuff to the table. And I think I want to say now that I don't think people realize how important the artist community has been to Mineral Point, because, you know, starting with Max and Ava and Bob and Edgar and a few others, and then all of us coming, you know, it was comfortable for artists. And even though it was, oh, you're some of them, not some of us, but, you know, anyone can get around that. You're just nice to them, you know? So, but I would say they have to be given credit for being here first. I think Max and Ava came during the Depression, I think. And it was really quite rough and tumble. I mean, they had kids, you know. How do you make a income being an artist during the Depression? So my hat is all up to off to all of the older group that forged ahead before we got here. So they all made it easier, and consequently we all hope that we've made it easier for newer artists. But maybe though maybe that's a little too egotistical, but just saying.